Fell asleep last night with a big smile on my face after all this. I woke up this morning with a big smile on my face because of all of this. It's just absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Live from Los Angeles this morning, of all places to be for the last couple of days. Pretty weird. Andy, I don't know how all your years covering baseball, and especially when you were working with Ron Santo and the Cubs broadcasts all those years, how you go into enemy territory like this, because it can be it can be a little brutal. I don't know how the players just have to have this cone of silence around them when they're in places like this. This is the first time I've ever been in an opposing city when something this big was going on.
Oh yeah, it gets intense. It certainly does, especially the higher the stakes, it seems the louder and more obnoxious the other fan base gets.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's definitely an affection for the Cubs, even here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. People who are wearing their Dodgers hats and Dodgers shirts and all that, you know, of course they wanted their team to win. And you know, everybody thought that Kershaw was going to be the big savior of the whole thing. That's all I've heard since I've been out here Thursday, that Kershaw was going to crush us. In this order, this is what all I've been hearing. Kershaw was going to crush us. The curse of the Billy Goat. Mm-hmm. They're still living with that out here. They apparently haven't turned on a TV, a radio, or opened a newspaper in the last 20 years or so to realize what this particular team is all about. All you heard on television sportscasts and radio here, Goat, Goat, Billy Goat, Billy Goat, Billy Goat, Kershaw, yeah. Billy Goat, Bartman, a lot of Bartman talk, you know, that the Cubs were going to, you know, collapse, that it wasn't going to happen. All these old things. I even heard one person trashing Cubs fans.
Oh, nice.
And playing that famous old Lee Elia tape.
Oh, where, yeah. From 83. Yeah.
How many? Was that 83?
83, yeah.
I was trying to remember how far back they went for that to try to trash Cubs fans out here. But for the most part, for real people, actual people, they were for their Dodgers, but they were good sports. They were congratulatory and happy that, you know, the Cubs have got a shot to win the World Series after all this time.
Yeah, so you should fire back at these people, because, you know, Dodger fans typically show up late and leave early. So you should ask them exactly how they found out that the Dodgers lost, because they're not allowed to turn on the TV after the seventh inning, right?
They all left. It was interesting. You know, I was out here Thursday, so I didn't go to Dodger Stadium, but I watched the game on television, and it was so interesting that there were – I thought for a minute, I should go watch the game.
Yeah, why not?
There's so many empty seats there.
Yeah, in all fairness, I mean, the traffic around there is a nightmare, and there's only one entrance and one exit. So that's a lot of fun.
Very true. They make Wrigleyville on a busy day look like Disneyland.
<Very true. laughs> Nice egress.
Yeah, I have been to Dodger Stadium, and it is difficult to get in and out. But man, what a feeling! I heard you say earlier that you wept.
Yeah.
When this happened, I did too.
I was a blubbering idiot for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's emotional after, you know, all these years. It was very emotional, and and so happy for this team, for these guys. They worked so hard while still loving it.
Yeah.
You could tell how much fun that they're having. You can't help but be happy. And just before the end of the game, Fox was showing pictures of some of the old timers that mm-hmm. were at the ballpark last night. And that, nothing gets me more than that. People, like you were talking about your dad.
Yeah.
And, I've thought about lifelong Cubs fans who, all they wanted to do was see their Cubs get into the World Series. And, many of them never did. But, how they must feel this morning is, I don't know how you don't get emotional when you see some of the old-timers who were out at the ballpark last night.
Yeah, and it kind of hit me again when we were watching some of the postgame while we were doing our postgame, and Kerry Wood, who's of recent vintage, was wearing a Ron Santo jersey.
Yeah.
And that just shows you, the connection between the generations of this fandom and also the players, and there's no real reason to hide the fact that you get emotional about it because I was telling Nick DiGilio last night when we had him on the show, people from the outside don't understand the emotional bond and connection that Cubs fans have with this team.
Right.
It's inexplicable if you don't know it. You can't understand it. You can't possibly understand it.
Yeah, there was a point during the game last night where they took, they're going either to a commercial or from a commercial, and it was like a silhouette of Ronnie's statue mm-hmm. outside the ballpark. And I really got a little choked up when I saw that, of the reminder that I guess Ronnie is still, he's still sort of here and he's still sort of watching over this. When I heard Go Cubs Go last night, I thought how happy Steve Goodman would have been. Like the original diehard musician, Cubs fan mm-hmm. that created this anthem.
That was the part that choked me up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really something when you think about, his song "A Dying Cubs Fan's uh-huh. Last Request." It's the emotion of it all. The emotion of it all is absolutely amazing. Hey, Shawnee, you know who we have on in about a half an hour?
Who?
You know this person very, very well, and Andy, I'll bet you do too.
Okay.
Longtime WGN Sports producer. Jack Rosenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary.
This love man Jack Rosenberg.
Is a legendary Cubs producer for WGN radio and television. It was Jack Rosenberg who said to our then general manager, Dan Fabian, why don't we try Ron Santo in the booth and see how Ronnie does doing the color commentary on it. He's the one that started that. And he's, I think he's 92 years old now, something like that.
I have so much respect for him.
Just one of the greatest guys that there is.
He was, you didn't feel like you worked for him. You worked with him. He was just a great man.
Just an amazing man. We're going to talk with Rosie in our next half hour. We've got so much great Cubs stuff for you this morning to continue the celebration, including after a quick break. You guys will be interested in this young up-and-coming sportscaster named Andy Mazur. with our
never heard of him.
Me neither.
We're trying to give him a break.
I hope so.
The Sunday morning sports preview. We'll talk more about the Cubs and all things sports coming up next on WGN.
Hey, holy mackerel, no doubt about it. The Cubs are on.
Great to hear some of these great old school Cubs songs again this morning, taking us back to our childhoods. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV morning news, we'll be talking Cubs, of course, and having all the reaction. I'm going to be interviewing Vince Vaughn today here in Los Angeles, a huge Cubs fan, so we'll have his reaction to all of that. All the reaction that you would expect, everything that you need to start your day, our WGN TV morning news tomorrow on the big number 9. And now at 9:24, time for our official Sunday sports preview. And back to Andy Mazur again, who's covering this morning for Sam in sports. What were some of the highlights for you last night, Andy? I mean, for me, just, you know, I'm certainly not you know, a sports expert by any means, but how Kershaw just could not do anything last night seemed to be like the big baseball headline of the game.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate too, because he did get most of the headlines, at least coming in and, you know, early in the game. But to me, the story was Kyle Hendricks, this kid that was a number five starter last year that was sort of undependable and in the postseason, and you never really knew what you were going to get, goes out and has a regular season like he did, leading the National League in ERA and coming out and pitching perhaps the best game he's ever thrown in his life. Basically, he gave up two hits. On the first pitch he threw, a base hit. On the last pitch he threw, a base hit. In between, it was a pleasure to watch this kid work. And, you know, he was talking after the game about how the early lead the Cubs gave him with a 2-0 lead in the first inning really helped him, because he could be a little more aggressive and things of that nature. And I tell you what, though, just watching the entire game like I did up here on the seventh floor, you just never had a doubt. I'm telling you, I had a really good feeling. I was telling someone earlier today, I was driving into the station, and I'm not a big believer in omens, but Dean, I was listening to the Billy Joel channel on Sirius XM, and the first song I heard was Say Goodbye to Hollywood.
How about that?
So there
How
you go.
How about that? That's cool.
Yep.
I do believe, you know, when omens like that happen, then I do start believing in them.
It's kind of hard not to, but I try after so many years, and you know, and we had Spike Odell on our post-game show last night, and you know, just you've been through this before, and it's so hard to wrap your head around the fact that they actually can do this. And then when they go out and do it, you're thinking to yourself, you know what, this is a different group, a different mindset, and
exactly.
They're fun to watch.
Exactly. That, I mean, really, and that's the conversation that I've had with so many people out here since Thursday. And again, I'm no baseball expert, but you know, and they keep bringing up the GOAT.
Yeah.
If I hear one more person out here talk about the curse of the GOAT, I mean, it to me it just shows that you don't. Well, for one thing, you're believing in a curse of a GOAT, number one, but that you don't know anything about this team and you know how great this team is. New generation, new organization, you know, all these players, they were in grade school when, you know, all these other things have happened. So, you know, it's amazing. And also in the fact that we see guys like Javi Baez and John Lester, the co-MVPs, right?
I think it was a great choice. I mean, John Lester pitched two great games, and Javi Baez was just great all series long, whether it be
stunning,
offensively
right?
or defensively.
Yep.
And you know, Dean, when they start talking about GOATs out there, yeah, that is an acronym for greatest of all time. So tell them thank you.
I wish I had known that
just say,
the other day.
Just say thank you.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we got the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
The greatest of all time. Yeah. Well, let's you know, I'm still taking one game at a time kind of guy. And it'll all start Tuesday in Cleveland. What's your, you know, not prediction of the games, but how do we stack up against the Cleveland Indians?
You know, I think we stack up pretty well. The Indians do have a very good bullpen. They have a deeper starting rotation, a healthier starting rotation than the Dodgers did. They also have a young man that plays shortstop who's also, I believe, from Puerto Rico, named Francisco Lindor, who is an absolute treasure to watch. He reminds he's like the American League version of Javi Baez. Very young, very peppy. Makes a lot of great plays at shortstop. It'll be fun to watch him. He's also got a little power, too. And it's also kind of interesting, too, because the Indians manager, Terry Francona, was the Red Sox manager in 04 and 07 when they won World Series under Theo Epstein. So there's a little bit of a cross storyline there as well. So it'll be interesting, and this is a result of the stupid rule, the All-Star game, that the American League won it. So the American League has the home field advantage, even though the Cubs won many, many, many more regular season games than the Indians. So it's going to have to kind of bite the bullet here, and you need to win on the road anyway.
All right. Well, we'll keep everybody posted on that. But games 1 and 2 are in Cleveland.
Correct.
3, 4, and 5 back at Wrigley Field. If games 6 and 7 back in Cleveland again.
Correct.
So we'll be keeping everybody posted on that. Blackhawks won last night, right?
Yeah, they did. They came back. They looked a little lethargic into the third period, and two goals within about a minute with a minute 28 to go. Tied it, scoreless overtime, and the Blackhawks won it in the shootout. 5-4 off tonight, back on the home ice tomorrow night against Calgary, 7:30 puck drop here on WGN.
Good. Looking forward to that. And we'll, as I say, we'll be talking lots more Cubs here this morning. A quick break. We'll update the news. And longtime WGN Cubs sports producer, Jack Rosenberg. He is a legend in Chicago sports history, joining us here on 720 WGN.
Sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in the World Series, and maybe sooner than we think. It seems to me that we don't have too much time. It seems the ingredients, the nucleus is there. One thing's certain, it requires a veteran manager, because this is a veteran team. It's a mixture of guys who are young, but still are veterans. All right, this is Harry Carey from Wrigley Field. So long, everybody.
Don't let anyone say that it's just a game. For I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley Field.
Always a special feeling. There's Eddie Vedder. Someday we'll go all the way. And someday. Happened last night as we continue to take those final steps to the World Series starting on Tuesday. You know, those of us that grew up in Chicago have been waiting for a night like last night forever. Our parents, our grandparents, generations before also have waited forever. We have such loyal Cubs fans, and no one more loyal than our next guest, who not only is a great Cubs fan, but as we were all listening to the Cubs and watching the Cubs on WGN Radio and WGN TV growing up, it was our next guest who, along with the great Jack Brickhouse, would bring us these broadcasts, the legendary WGN sports producer, Jack Rosenberg, who joins us on the phone right now. Jack, good morning, my friend.
Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So, what's been your reaction the last couple of weeks, and especially last night, Jack?
Well, I'm just so very, very happy for all the downtrodden Cubs fans, that many of whom I watch literally grow up at Wrigley Field. And to have them rewarded and to have this great city of Chicago rewarded means a lot to me. Now, I'm 90 years old at this point. I don't feel it, but I am. And I never thought I would see it. I thought in 1969, when Kenny Holtzman pitched his no-hitter on August the 19th, and the Cubs were 8-9 games ahead, it looked like that was going to be the year. And then they lost the pennant by 8 games to the Mets. And to have the Cubs do it this year, I've had the feeling for several weeks now that nothing can stop this team. And it's really a joy for people like me who've been around it. I would like to think, Dean, that somewhere in the great beyond, Jack Brickhouse and Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau and Harry Carey and Lloyd Pettit and Ron Sano and all the people that I was lucky enough to be surrounded with, or smiling down and thinking, finally, at last, the Cubs have done it. And 71 years later, to win a pennant, when they were in the World Series in 1945, to show you how old I am, I was in the Navy then in World War II and wasn't even aware of what was going on until it was all over. And I just can't say enough about all you people who were involved in the Cubs for all these years. Means everything to me. And to be, you know, Dean, I've considered you one of the premier broadcasters in America for years. And to be interviewed by you on the day after the Cubs win, after 71 years, is icing on the cake.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, you're one of the guys that I thought of as I was watching the game as they were clinching last night. I'm not ashamed to say that I got kind of teary-eyed. I got a little emotional, not only seeing something happen that, you know, we've waited for so long in Chicago, but there was a point in the game where they showed a glimpse of the Ron Santo statue last night, and it got me thinking about, as you say, Santo and all the great players and Ernie Banks, all these people that you were close personal friends with, and all the great broadcasters, you know, and the long suffering fans, and you. I thought, well, Rosie has got to be going crazy tonight after all these years of covering and suffering with the Cubs. 90 years old, to get to see this happen is had to be a pretty special thing to him.
It was very special, and ironically, I was attending a benefit for Swedish Covenant Hospital at the Hilton Hotel, and the fact that they put the television screen up on the stage during a benefit banquet was incredible to me. And people were just agog at what was going on. It was a great night down there, a great night for Chicago and the Cubs. Let's hope that everything remains peaceful. This means a lot. It means even more, embellishes everything that the Cubs are doing for people to conduct themselves and enjoy it and be clean about everything. And I understand there were very few incidents last night, and that means a lot to me, too, because this is a city we want to keep peaceful and happy and enjoy the moment for what it is. It's a great moment in the history of the city.
Sure is. I was talking a little earlier on the program, Jack, about you, you know, and promoting that you were going to be on in a little while, and I was talking about that you are the guy responsible for bringing Ron Santo to the booth. You were the one who thought, you know, let's give him a shot. That's a pretty big deal.
Well, I was fortunate enough to audition Ron Santo and Bob Brantley in Florida, and as soon as the audition started, I knew that Brantley had the job. He was glib, he was a college man, and he had done some broadcasting, and Santo was a little reluctant to get on the microphone and do his thing. But I felt that when the salespeople went out to make their calls at WGN, that the ones they wanted to be with was Santo. And so it was a perfect match between Brantley and Santo, and I recommended to the company that they hire them both. And I still remember our program director then saying, "Rosie, all the years you've been around the Tribune, don't you know about budgets? We got enough trouble hiring one." And I said, "Well, here's the way we do it at the Tribune." I said, "I've been here longer than any of you people." I said, "If we want somebody, we move some money from here and put it over here and then put it over here and revolve it and mix it up. And before you know it, you can hire who you want." And I said, "Santo belongs to be in that radio booth, but he needs a chance to get his feet wet and take some time to get comfortable so that he knows that he's in the right place."
Right. And I remember you telling me stories about how you coached him. He was trying to be a baseball announcer, and you coached him to just be yourself.
I didn't really have to coach him on anything. These guys were all legends in their own right. And I was just really along for the ride. Wow. I was lucky in the people I was surrounded with, including you. And it means everything to me to see everybody with a smile on their face today about what's going on with the Cubs.
We have a couple of other guys here, Rosie, who have smiles on their faces, even bigger smiles when they heard that you were going to be on the show today. Andy Mazur from our WGN Sports Department is in with us this morning. Andy?
Yeah, Rosie, yeah, it's great
to
hear
you. Andy, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well. It's great to hear you here on the station again. And I was just curious, you know, in all the time you spent with Jack and in the booth, does this team playing right now remind you of any team that you guys were around?
The most they remind me would be 1969, because it looked like we were, yeah, there was no question about it. And it just did not work out that way. And baseball is a funny game, and it's a crapshoot when it gets down to this stage of the season. And I'm amazed that it took this long to do it. But I want to tell you something, Andy, and you'd appreciate this.
Yeah.
What I would like to do is hang around until the Cubs play the White Sox in the World Series.
Oh, man.
That would be the epitome of sports in Chicago. And don't think that it won't happen at some point. I don't know if I'll be around to see it, but I know you guys are very young, and hopefully you will be. And that's really going to – when that happens, it's going to be unbelievable.
Holy smokes. Yeah. Can you imagine something like that? Another of your old pals is with us here every Sunday morning, Rosie. Good old Dave Schwann is doing our news. Schwann?
Dave, you're one of the best, and it's good to talk to you.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Jack. It's great to talk to you on such a great day here. I was thinking about you and Jack Brickhouse and Vince Lloyd as well last night watching the game. And you may recall that we were working together in 1989 when the Cubs were in the division, and how disappointed we were then. And but isn't it great to see this day come? And proud to talk to you at a celebratory occasion like this. So it's just great. It took all that time, but we finally made it, didn't we?
It's been an incredible feeling to talk to all of you, and y'all have been my buddies. WGN has a special place in my heart, and I think it has a special place in the hearts of all the listeners out there that we have brought all the sports to them all through the years, and to have been a part of that means a lot to me. And I never get too old to enjoy that and to think about all the beautiful times all of us had together, putting on all these games and being around the great people of Chicago and the Midwest.
We were having fun and getting paid for it. How long did you do the broadcast, Jack?
I was a sports editor for 45 years, and I wouldn't take anything for having done it. I used to tell people I may not have gotten rich, but I got it all back in a lot of other ways. And to work around people like those of you with whom I'm speaking right now means the world and all to me. I'm older now. The years have gone by. But I've been very lucky with my associations. I had very little talent, but I was surrounded. I was surrounded by a lot of great people, and I thank God for that.
Well, you know, when I look back at all the legends with whom I've been fortunate enough to work with and get to know, and you know, be friends with, you know, in my time here at WGN, there's no one whose friendship that I value more and respect more than Jack Rosenberg. Truly just, you know, one of the greatest guys that you're ever going to meet. I'm proud to be your friend, and I'm so happy that you could spend some time with us.
And the feeling is mutual, and once again, I'm appreciative to all of you, including the producer who called me to tell me that you wanted to put me on the air this morning, because all these people are part of this whole syndrome that makes WGN what it is today.
You know,
and I wish all you guys the best.
Thanks,
and let's
man.
Hope that the Cubs continue to do well. And let's hope everybody is happy in all their pursuits.
You know what? We're late, but I gotta tell you this one more story, Jack. I was out here in L.A. About a month or so ago, and I was doing the interviews for the movie Sully,
right.
that stars Tom Hanks. And right. I was talking with Tom Hanks. And I said, you know, I reintroduced myself to him, not assuming that he would remember who I am, although he did, which I'm proud of. But he says to me, "How's Jack? How's Jack?" And I knew, because you had told me the story, that you had been corresponding with Tom Hanks on manual typewriter. Jack uses a manual typewriter, and Tom Hanks is an aficionado of old typewriters. And you guys have sent handwritten or manual typed letters back and forth to each other. That's amazing.
We've been doing that for a couple of years now. And the fact that he takes the time to do it shows you what kind of guy he is. I'm very proud of that.
I think it shows what kind of respect he has for you, just like we all do. But he sends it.
And I thank you very much, and God bless all you guys, and God bless America.
He sends his love to you, and God bless you, Jack. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully we can talk again after a World Series win.
That's the deal.
We send our love to you. Thank you so much, Jack Rosenberg, WGN legend.
Curse of 45. Drive a goat on up to Wrigley and we'll let it inside. These good old boys are gonna give it a try. Singing, this could be the year the curse dies. This could be the year the curse dies.
Yeah, that's all I've been hearing about out here in Los Angeles since I've been out here doing interviews since last Thursday. Curse, curse, curse. They love talking some billy goat trash out here. Curse, Bartman, what else? They bring up every negative thing of the Cubs past, everything except how amazing this team was that went on to win the pennant last night. Paul Sullivan, Chicago Tribune Sports, joining us right now. Hey, Paul, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm recovering. I got to admit, I'm recovering.
Have you gotten any sleep at all?
I did get a few hours, but it's one of those sleeps where you wonder when you wake up, did I really sleep?
Did I dream?
You know how that is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very definitely. So what was it like for you last night in covering this? I love your the piece that you have this morning, just talking about facing the realization that the Cubs are going to the World Series.
Yeah, no, it was pretty much a perfect night, I think, for Cub fans. It was a beautiful weather. Just the game itself, I think that it was so important to get off to a lead just to, alleviate some of the anxiety that Cub fans tend to get when it gets to this part of the season. And, like you said, people bringing up the past and all the nonsense about the curse and blah, blah, blah. So once they got to the lead and, that first inning lead and Kyle Hendricks was just dealing, it was just you could just sense the anticipation all night long as it came to the ninth inning. And then it just ended with a double play, and that was just, set off the whole eruption around Wrigley Field. It was just a really beautiful night for everyone involved. And congrats to the Cubs on a really, really remarkable season.
Yeah, very definitely. Your piece today in the Tribune, if folks haven't seen it yet, One for the Ages, WON, One for the Ages, after years of waiting and suffering, Cubs are in the World Series. Just a really nice perspective on, kind of the history of this, leading up to last night and all that we've been through and really putting some perspective on. I may carry a copy of this with me in my pocket while I'm out here in Los Angeles, so I could hand it to people so they understand why this is such a big deal.
Well, it's kind of a Cliff's Notes version of the Cubs since 1945. If you can, condense 70 years into one story, I've covered the Cubs in some capacity since the mid '80s to late '80s, and I've seen so many managers come in, and all the press conferences are the same. This is the guy. We're gonna do it. They all have their new methods and their new routines, and it just never worked out for anyone. And finally, they got this guy who is just so off the wall and so different, and just. really a breath of fresh air in Chicago sports. And Joe Maddon, you know, God bless him, he got it done. And I think if they didn't have him, I don't think they would be here as talented as this team is, because he really set the mood for them in spring training, all the goofy, wacky skits they did. And then during the season, just, you know, his attitude about, yeah, just show up for work. You know, you don't need to take batting practice 5 hours a day. Just, he's really changed the concepts of how teams prepare for baseball games. And the fact that it's worked, I would imagine a lot of teams going to start copying this now.
What about the players? In what way was this group of amazing young athletes different than ones that we've seen in the past?
Well, first of all, I think it's just a great blend of youth and experience. I mean, the Cubs really didn't go into the free agent market during the rebuild, except with the exception of they did sign Edwin Jackson a few years ago, and I think they all admit that was a mistake. But they waited until all the kids kind of came together at the same time, the Chris Bryants and Schwarber and Javi Baez and them. And once the team was kind of grounded, at least they were in the AAA level, then they started getting the free agents, that the John Lesters and guys like that, Dexter Fowler. And it just the timing was right for this team. And they all have the same kind of demeanor. They're kind of laid back, but it's kind of, you know, during the game, they're very intense. So it's, I don't know. I think it's just the right group of guys. Obviously there've been talented teams in the past that got to the playoffs and they just tanked it. But these guys believed in themselves, and I think the city believed in them. And I think, you know, the fans got to pat themselves on the back because they showed a lot of patience through the rebuild, and it's starting to pay off, or it has paid off, actually.
So what do you think will be happening now in the World Series? What I don't know if you want to make a prediction or, you know, what can we look forward to?
You know, I can't see them losing, to tell you the truth, because I just think they're a much better team than Cleveland. But having said that, Cleveland has just put on an amazing run in the playoffs. No one expected them to do anything. They've had a lot of injuries to their starting pitching. They threw a pitcher in the playoffs against Toronto that, you know, and no one had ever heard of, including, you know, the Cleveland people. So it's just been a fairy tale run for them as well. Terry Francona, the manager, everyone knows him from the Red Sox days. He won under Theo Epstein, hired him in Boston. He won there. They've got this great, great bullpen that's really carried them in the playoffs. Andrew Miller, probably the best reliever in baseball right now, even better than Chapman. So I think it's going to be a really interesting series, and the fact that Kyle Schwarber is probably going to join in just adds another remarkable storyline to it. So I think it's going to go 6-7 games, and I think the Cubs are going to squeak by, and then we'll see if Wrigley Field is still standing after that.
maybe they should have waited for all that construction before.
they may have to reconstruct
some of the reconstruction that's going on.
The rebuild of the rebuild.
Yeah, right. Now, you worked closely with the legendary Mike Royko, Paul, for years. What do you think Royko would be saying and doing after what happened last night?
Oh, my God. Yeah, he would just be he would be as drunk as I was last night. I know that. probably not in the same places, though. But he was, as most people that remember him know, he's just the biggest Cub fan. He really is, I think, responsible for a lot of the Cubs' image around the nation that you hear out there in L.A. about the curse and all that, because he was always writing about the Billy Goat stuff, and as kind of a joke, not as if it was real. And, you know, obviously he died before the Bartman thing, but he did, you know, his persona and Slats Grobnik, his alter ego, right, were always involved in some kind of Cub shenanigans. He would be really, obviously, thrilled with this team. And I think he would really relate to Joe Maddon, because they're both cerebral, you know, people, and Joe's the most cerebral manager in baseball. And I was talking to his wife, Judy. She comes to Cubs games quite often, and I think we agreed that his favorite player on the Cubs would be Kyle Schwarber, just because his body type and his personality is kind of a old school type of Cubs player.
Yeah.
So yeah, we miss Mike, and it would be so great to read what he had to say today.
Right, that's what I was thinking too.
Certainly, you can read some of his old columns and enjoy those on the Cubs.
That's you can't help but reflect on these legendary Cubs fans that we all grew up with through the years. Always great to talk with Paul Sullivan, Chicago Tribune baseball writer. Get some rest. It's going to be a busy couple of week or so for you. Good to talk to you, Paul.
Series, or are you still out there?
I'm going to be coming home today, and
cool.
I'm going to do my best not to have to travel any place until the World Series is over. Too exciting.
All right, I'll see you at Wrigley.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much. There's Paul Sullivan.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. And I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. The problem is a lot of brains, but no polish. I gotta holler just to be heard with every word I drop.
One of the songs from maybe the biggest show on Broadway in a decade, Hamilton, an American musical. The show went on to win, Pulitzer Prize. It won a Grammy Award. It's won 11 Tony Awards for the show itself, for its writer, creator, for its original star, Lin-Manuel Miranda. And this week, Hamilton, an American musical, opened here in Chicago at the Private Bank Theater and is pretty much in an open run. Tickets are sold through September of 2017, and that's likely to go on for several years. But is the show worth it? People, you know, stood in line for hours and hours and hours to get tickets. People are paying top-notch prices for Hamilton tickets, maybe as much as people might be paying for Cubs World Series tickets. The lines very, very similar for both. Is it all worth it? I saw the official opening the other night, as did our panel of guests this morning, other Chicago area theater critics, including Chris Beyer, who is senior editor, chief theater critic, Time Out Chicago. And I'm guessing from your tweets, Chris, Cubs fan also.
You guess right. It's a pretty exciting week all around here.
I love your tweet from, I guess, last night. Please don't burn down Wrigleyville tonight. We've got to play another series there. It's a perfect tweet, Chris. Perfect tweet.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Also joining Chris back at our WGN studios is our pal Phil Potempa, critic at large, entertainment columnist for the Post Tribune of Northwest Indiana. And Phil, welcome. Good to have you here with us. I'm hoping you've got some Cubs love also.
Yes, exactly. Even though I live on the south side by Midway, we had lots of fireworks going off as well. So we were right there with it.
Well, that's good to hear. I've gotten quite a few tweets from people who are Sox fans who are happy because Chicago's in it. You know, there's a Chicago team in it. Some people are happy. I've had a few that are not so polite or happy about it all. But for the most part, I think the majority of the Sox fans that I've heard from are happy for their Northside brothers. And also our pal Betty Moore, who's the editor of Le Bon Travel and Culture. Hi, Betty. How are you?
Good, Dean. How are you?
Are you
realize
fan?
What this means. If the Cubs win the World Series, you know that famous play about the Cubs where they lose every year, they're not going to be able to play it anymore.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of that old school Cubs thinking.
That's true.
Yeah, but what a week this has been with Hamilton opening in Chicago and this happening. It's been just a crazy busy whirlwind.
You asked the right question, though, Dean. Is it worth it? Is it worth those tickets?
And if you're asking me that question, and I'm not sure you were, but I'm going to answer anyway.
Yes, go ahead.
I think it is so worth it. I think it is. It really does live up to all the hype. And I came into this thinking there is no possible way, no matter how good this is, with all the hype that's around the show and people waiting for days in line, that this show could possibly live up to the hype. And I think it absolutely does. Anybody agree with me?
You know what? Here, I'm torn a little bit. I'll tell you why. One, I think it's a super show. I think it's fantastic, okay? I think the direction, the choreography, the music, the lyrics, and everything is fantastic. But I do have a big quibble with it. If Hamilton, I mean, Miranda based this loosely on the Cherno book, but he made one, I think it's kind of an inaccuracy also that people might come away with. If Hamilton had had his way, America would have been a totally different country. He was in favor of a British monarchy, a king. He thought that that the president and the senator should be voted in for life, which is why he had such an opposition for Jefferson. None of that is in the play. So it's as far as the theatrical entertainment, it's terrific. But it doesn't. You know what? I don't quite think it has the emotional depth of something like Les Mis. And as far as the tickets go, I think this frenzy over the tickets and getting to see it is a little bit crazy. I mean, people are paying, what, $500-$600 to see tickets, to see a show like this? And even if they go to the balcony or the mezzanine, you can't see anything from up there, by the way. The nosebleed, you miss out on a lot of choreography. So, you know what, if the prices were more like $150, I would say, yeah, it's really worth $150, maybe $180.
Okay, so let's see what the guys think. Chris, how about you?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that number, Betty, because I first saw the show in New York, the Broadway production, about a year ago, and I paid $180 for my seat there. And I only did that because I anticipated how big of a hit the show was going to be. So I bought tickets before it opened on Broadway, about 6 months out, before I actually saw it in November. The same seat that I sat in a year ago at the Richard Rogers Theater on Broadway is now going for, like, I think $849 face value.
You are very, very prescient. I mean, that was very prescient of you. The thing is that look at what media can do. Look at what buzz can do. Look at what hype can do. You can go from $180 to $860 just because of the buzz and the hype.
Yeah, well, I will say, though.
Supply and demand, though. But, how did you compare, Chris, the New York production to this one that we had here? I think it's pretty strong.
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, there's a lot of hype around the show, obviously, but I think it's incredibly well-deserved. I think that this show as a, you know, history aside, obviously there are going to be some elisions and all of that, but I think as a piece of musical theater, it is transformative. It's, I won't say revolutionary, because, you know, we'll see what kind of lasting effect it may have on the genre, on the form. But I think it is a singular achievement and really incredible in the way that it humanizes these guys, the founding fathers, who we think of, I think, you know, in kind of oil painting terms, right? The way that the show manages to bring them into modern vernacular and make them seem like real fallible people, sometimes noble, sometimes petty, transforming themselves from rebels into statesmen in a way that's relatable to modern audiences is an incredible achievement, I think. And speaking to your question, Dean, I think that the cast that we have in Chicago is absolutely stands up to the original Broadway cast that I saw last year. I think there's some incredible talent on stage. Miguel Cervantes, who plays Hamilton, is a little more grounded, I thought, than Lin-Manuel Miranda, who played the role originally. I think Joshua Henry, who's playing Aaron Burr here, is an incredible talent.
Incredible. I mean, he's showstopper.
Absolutely. He's already been nominated for, you know, Tony Award twice, so we know he's got the chops. But he really just lays into this role and makes it his own with a different kind of charisma than Leslie Odom Jr., who won the Tony for the Broadway production of Hamilton, and of course Karen Olivo, who is, you know, who is kind of retired from Broadway and is now living in Madison, Wisconsin, but has a relationship with Lin-Manuel Miranda and the rest of the team, who she worked on In the Heights with, and is now playing Angelica Schuyler in the Chicago production, because she's like, yeah, I can commute from Madison to Chicago. And how lucky for us that she is, because she's just a phenomenal talent and yeah. Really, you know, I'm ready to go back and hear her sing Satisfied again right now.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait to see it again, seriously, because I think the show rushes over you so quickly as it's happening. It's just relentless energy and creativity coming over you. And but as Chris is saying, these characters are so humanized. You know, most of the music is hip hop, rap, R&B, something that you quickly acclimate yourself to if you're not a huge fan of hip hop music. It's very easy to follow. It's a very interesting way of telling this story. But it's a tsunami wave of energy that flies over you. But at the same time, you're laughing, and there are some moments in this humanization that are so touching and so beautiful that, you know, you're welling up a little bit with the emotion of it all. I think it works in so many ways. Phil Potempa from the Post Tribune, Northwest Indiana, what's your take on all of this?
Well, I like to write with a voice as a critic's eye and an ear that is of the casual theater goer. So this is something that is a production inviting people that maybe don't usually go to the theater. And that's why, of course, when we talk about the hype, it's drawing so many people to see this because they're curious. And that in itself is a wonderful thing because it's bringing these new bodies into the theater. And one of my favorite parts of the opening was at the intermission. I stayed at my seat. How many people around me were Googling and looking up the names of these historical figures that they maybe had just a casual, perhaps, understanding right. of, but not anything in any depth. And it certainly plants that seed. And there's no denying that a cast that's having to sing an entire story and do it in such a way that it relates and connects to the audience is you know, certainly something that is a phenomenon that you don't usually get. So, you know, it is fantastic in that way.
What did you think of the performances, the production? You see, as we all do, see, you know, lots and lots of shows, lots and lots of productions. Most notably, shows that are hits in New York that go on the road, and you get generally a really scaled-down version of that show when it opens someplace out of town. I don't think we saw that with this, with Hamilton in Chicago. I think they came here full guns a-blazing. What do you guys think?
Well, exactly. And one of the things I think was so interesting was talking to another theater insider, and they were saying the staging itself is really rather stark, and it really puts the highlight and the emphasis on the performances. But in 20 years from now, when this finally does make its way to other venues, it's something that's going to be able to be done, and it's going to translate. Of course, you're going to have a talented cast to deliver those lyrics and the songs, but the theater companion I brought with, again, was not a theater person, but was absolutely stunned, and I thought it was fascinating. Had already bought the soundtrack months ago because it's the music and the songs that certainly do pull people into this as well.
Yeah, I think to that point, Phil, I absolutely agree that you know, this the scale of this production, the physical production, you can tell that this is a production that they have built for this theater, for the Private Bank Theater, to last for as long as, you know, people will buy tickets. There are, as you said, Dean, they're already on sale right now through next September, and you know, we're all expecting it to be here much beyond that. It'll be interesting to see when the show does actually build a touring company, a road company, you know, how some of that does get scaled back. You know, the turntable on the stage is an integral part of the staging. You know, it is a very it's a large cast. It's you know, a lot of costumes. They're launching another company next spring in Los Angeles, I believe, that will then go on to San Francisco and eventually become the touring company. So that'll be interesting to see. But I also, you know, just to Phil's other point, I talked to Lin-Manuel Miranda for our for Time Out's fall print issue a few months back, and you know, one of the things that he really kind of marveled at in our conversation was the way that so many people who have yet to see this show, to enter set foot in the theater have fallen in love with the show because of the cast recording, which is, you know, one of it's the largest selling cast recording in years and years and years, and certainly the first ever to hit number one on the Billboard rap chart. So that phenomenon is really interesting to me, too.
Did anybody like George Washington?
Oh, I loved him.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was the best. I thought he was the funniest character in the show. And what, you know, something, though, when you were talking about getting close to, you know, humanity of the show and the people that, you know, they connect with, John Lawrence was a very good friend of Hamilton. And in the show, when he dies, Hamilton looks a little bit disturbed. Okay, but in reality, they were so close that people actually questioned their intimacy. And when he died, Hamilton was totally devastated. I guess the show wouldn't have the time, you know, to do that. It was going by so fast. You know what? I liked George the best. I thought that the character that was playing, the actor that was playing Jefferson, I think Jefferson was a little buffoonish. Am I wrong about that? That's how I was taking it.
I thought funny. I yeah. liked him. I've heard people say that this week. It's a little bit of comic relief in the show. But uh-huh. I have heard people say that. I enjoyed the Jefferson character. But talking about comic relief, can we talk about King George, who is truly the comic relief in the show.
He was the most hysterical character.
Hilariously
loved him.
Funny.
Yeah. He was, the lines were great.
I'm out of time, so I got a dash. So thumbs up for the show from everybody? Is that right?
Yeah, I would, even if I have quibbles, which I always do, Dean, yes, thumbs up.
Yes, and yeah. Dean, I'll tell you one thing. I still teach a couple of college classes. The number one topic that college students say that bores them is history and golf on TV, and there are young people at the theater with this. So we're in the right direction here.
Oh, please tell me that there's not going to be a golf.
There will be a golf show.
That's the day that I retire. Good Lord. And Betty, I got to say, I'm really impressed with your American history here. We're going to have to save that for another conversation.
My biggest problem is that people don't know history. So this might be good.
Young people
this will be their gateway to read the actual biography, right?
Definitely.
Dean, I just want to say lastly, notice unlike the presidential candidates, how polite we were. We did not talk over each other. We were very polite critics to each other.
You know what? Dean doesn't like that. Dean would have liked it if we had gotten in a fight, the three of us.
I do enjoy conflict. Really like. I'm not proud of it, but I do enjoy conflict.
Of course.
Betty, that's why I love having Betty on the show so much. Betty Moore from Le Bon Travel and Culture. Chris Vier, Cubs fan and senior editor, chief theater critic, Time Out Chicago, and critic at large, entertainment columnist for the Post Tribune of Chicago, Phil Potempa. Thank you all very much. Gotta wonder how people like Harry Carey would be reacting to this last night, and what that would have sounded like with Harry Carey up in the booth with the big win last night. Just real quick, to the guys in our control room, a switch is open, and I'm hearing inside the control room. I'm not hearing what's on the air, so if somebody could close that switch, I would appreciate that. In the meantime, let's go to Dave Ennett, WGN Sports Director. Thank you guys for closing the switch. WGN Sports Director Dave Ennett, who is back in Chicago. You know how that is, Dave, when you're away someplace and you can't do a hand motion or, you know, get a message to your crew, behind the scenes crew, and something goes wrong. That's what I had going on here. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, there were a lot of people celebrating last night, Dean, so it's understandable there would be a switch open.
There may be some brain cells that are missing.
There could be.
That got slightly burnt out last night and all the celebration. So what was your take on last night? What was your reaction when it was all happening?
Well, I said this, and I was on WGN-TV last night when the game ended, and the first word that – well, the whole night, I thought it was surreal. And you know, I sort of had the same thought you did, Dean, that you mentioned a moment ago. I joined WGN Radio in 1984 when the Cubs were just about to play the Padres in the National League Championship Series. And all those years, looking back, I mean, it's hard not to be reflective at a time like this and to think about the close calls and the near misses and the dashed dreams along the way. And so watching this all unfold last night, where you had the feeling right from the start that this was going to be it, it was really kind of a strange feeling. Not a bad feeling, just a really surreal feeling. Yeah. And being able to go on last night, and I turned to the to Mark Spelsa, Jackie Bang, and I said, I can't believe I'm saying the Cubs win the pennant. Just words you always wondered, right? Would you ever hear those words in the same sentence? And yet, here we are.
I had the same feeling. I heard, I was listening to a Los Angeles sports station. The Cubs are the National League champions. And you have to stop for a second and kind of pinch yourself a little bit. It's amazing. And I was surprised. You're probably a little more stoic on this because you were working. But I was surprised how emotional that I was about this whole thing. Of, you know, thinking about Ronnie and thinking about Harry Carey and Ernie Banks and, you know, all these guys who waited all their lives for something like this to happen. And we had on the program WGN former sports producer Jack Rosenberg, a legend in WGN sports history. We're going to replay that interview at 12:30, by the way, if you missed it. Guys like that who, you know, have spent decades and decades and decades and decades waiting for something like this to happen. You can't help but get emotional when, you know, something nice happens for people who've waited all their lives for, you know, when it finally does.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of that last night. I thought first about Ron Santo, with whom we worked for so long, and people like that, but also happy for all the people who have been with the Cubs for so long. And there's this connection with this franchise that I don't think necessarily translates to other sports in the same way. And that's not to say that generations haven't shared a love of the Bears and passed it down from father to son and daughter and from sibling to sibling or whatever. But I think it's a little different with the Cubs because you've had all these years without a championship. And so I sensed last night there was a lot of feeling and there was a lot of emotion involved in this. In fact, Dan Rohn, our colleague from Channel 9, when he was on doing a live shot for Wrigley and Mark Sapelsa brought that up to him, he said, don't you sense this whole generational thing with the Cubs? And Dan got a little choked up talking about his own father. And so I think that a lot of people were feeling those emotions last night, wishing they could share it with people who they had lost, who were Cubs fans, and maybe had passed down their love of the Cubs to the next generation.
Yeah, so all that said, you know, the happiness and the celebration, it's back to work on Tuesday. How does this these National League champion Cubs look facing the American League champion Indians?
I think they stack up very well. I really do. Now, Vegas loves them. You know, Las Vegas has made the Cubs big favorites in the World Series. Now, that obviously guarantees you nothing. But they usually tend to know something, right? But I like the Cubs. Now, they don't have home field in this series, and they've played so well at Wrigley Field that certainly they would have an advantage if they were starting the series at home. That said, I don't think there's any reason they can't go out to Cleveland and capture home field. And I think I like the Cubs starting pitching better than the Indians. The Indians have had injuries in their pitching staff. They're going to get one of their guys back, Danny Salazar. I love the fact that John Lester is going to be very well rested for game one of the series. I wouldn't think that Kyle Hendricks will pitch game two in this series because he would only be going on 3 days rest. So Joe Maddon hasn't announced his starters yet, so they'll have to adjust that. But, you know, it's a seven-game series. They're going to need all these guys. I think that the Cubs, look, they've done everything along the way that they were expected to do or hoped to do. I think they've been the best team in baseball all year. That said, Cleveland has had a hot hand in this postseason. They've only lost one game in the playoffs. They're 7-1. They swept the Boston Red Sox, which is no small feat, and then they took four out of five from the Toronto Blue Jays. So the other factor I think that might come into play here is that the Indians will have had a longer layoff. Now, sometimes that's good because you get a lot of rest. Sometimes is it rest or rust? So that'll be the question going into game one on Tuesday. But I like the Cubs, and I think that you know, they're going to come home. They're going to have games 3, 4, and 5 at Wrigley Field next weekend, Halloween weekend. I mean, how perfect is that, Dean,
you have Wrigley Field?
Every game, by the way, will be at 7 o'clock, which makes it much more watchable for those of us who get up in the wee hours in the morning.
Yeah, I think for everybody, these 8 o'clock starts for us over the past week were very difficult. I think even for people who don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We'll look forward to hearing a lot more about this on Steve Cochran's show tomorrow morning. Dave Ennett, thank you for joining us. Always good to chat with you, and we'll see you soon.
Same here. Thanks, Dino. Safe travels.
Thank you, sir. It is an historic day after here on 720 WGN. It's Dean Richards live in Los Angeles this morning. I'm out here doing some interviews, but have been proudly wearing my Cubs hat since I got here the other day. And, I've had some good-natured fun with some Dodgers fans out here. And I got to say, they had some very warm words last night. Disappointed, but they were pretty good sports about the whole thing and rooting for the Cubs out here last night. And that's what it's all about for us this morning on this historic day. I wanted to bring in Lauren Comateur, who is writer and editor for The Athletic. Brings us her perspective on the whole thing. Lauren, thank you very much for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
So how are you feeling this morning? Were you out celebrating and driving around beeping your car horn last night going crazy?
Not quite driving around beeping my horn, but there was some celebrating, and it was an amazing atmosphere last night in Wrigleyville, as you probably saw.
I saw only on the news, because I'm out here, of course, but describe what that was like and, the hysteria, euphoria that, people were celebrating after the win last night.
It was amazing. I mean, the game went by fairly, I think, before 10 o'clock. Kyle Hendricks just rolled through the Dodgers lineup, and before you knew it, there was 6 outs and then 3 outs, and there wasn't too much of a countdown going on, really. I mean, we were up 5-0, so everyone was feeling pretty confident, and then when that last play ball that Addison Russell snagged and threw to Javi Baez and then to Anthony Rizzo, it was over so quickly, and then everyone just kind of lost it. just the players celebrating on the field, and they were really, getting into it with the fans and running around and kind of
sure
appreciating it, which was really cool to see.
What were the kind of things that people were saying to you last night? I mean, was it more than just, the usual woo, you know what I mean? Like that kind of just people screaming, or were you capturing some real stories, from people who are connecting with this on different levels?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people definitely have different perspectives of it depending on their age and, what they've been through as a Cubs fan. But I think there's just like a different feeling with this particular team. Of course, everyone was remembering what happened back in 2003. But I think everyone feels like this team is just level, and they are. and just feeling like this sense of, you know, we're not done yet. There's still one more box to check off, and that's, I think, exactly how the players feel too.
Yeah, and that's I kind of want to focus on that a little bit because, you know, it's fun to celebrate. It's fun for this, you know, historic day for Cubs fans. But the fact of the matter is Tuesday is coming up, and you know, everyone is. I'm so curious to get people's opinions on how this very talented Cubs team will match up against a very talented Cleveland Indians team.
Yes, it will be very interesting. I mean, the Cubs haven't played Cleveland this year. The last time they saw them was last season. And they haven't really gotten a good look at these pitchers. But it's the Dodgers that that doesn't really faze them. I mean, they had only seen one or two of the Dodgers starters this season. So I think they're not really fazed by that. And it'll be interesting also. I know everyone is kind of watching and waiting to see what's going to happen with Kyle Schwarber and see whether he's back on the roster for the World Series.
The way that, you know, we were looking at this Dodgers team and particularly their ace pitcher, Kershaw, is there a player or, you know, certain players that we should be most worried about?
I think the big one for the Indians is Andrew Miller, who is their star closer, who the Cubs had their eye on this trade deadline season. And we ended up obviously getting Aroldis Chapman instead. Miller has been lights out this postseason. The Cubs really pursued him, but the Yankees wanted Kyle Schwarber, and the Cubs weren't willing to give Schwarber up. So the Indians ended up acquiring him, and he's been awesome for them. So I think that'll really be something to watch for, whether the Cubs can get to Miller.
Yeah, one of the things that people have been talking about are Cleveland injuries. Is that going to be a factor playing in our favor?
It could be, for sure. I mean, the Indians have definitely been battered up this season, but that's been something that they've been able to obviously overcome. So it'll definitely be interesting to see if the Cubs can sort of take advantage of that. And they have kind of proved that they've been able to take advantage of teams' weaknesses so far. So, yeah, that will be definitely interesting to watch.
So what would be your prediction then if it's not too early to begin making predictions slash you're too superstitious to make a prediction? Because that's how I've been. I don't want to jinx anything by anything I say or do.
Yeah, same here. But if I had to guess, I would guess it would go to 7 games, and I'll take the Cubs.
All right. I think without exception, all the experts that we've spoken with this morning, everyone is picking the Cubs. So hopefully that pans out that way.
Exactly.
I appreciate you joining us, Lauren. Thank you so much. Lauren is a writer and editor for the Chicago-based Sports Beat blog, The Athletic. And we appreciate you joining us, Lauren. Have a great day today. Go Cubs.
Go Cubs. Thanks, Dean.